Hey team, welcome to the Professionally Offensive Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Cabrera. This is the spot where we provide raw, unfiltered insights from some amazing guests. Stand by, you're about to be offended in all the right ways. All right, team, welcome back to the podcast. I am here in San Antonio right now, which is a little bit different from our headquarters there in Austin, Texas, with the one and only Graham Weston. Graham, thanks for being on.
It's great to be with you.
So I've got to give a little history just on, or at least not history, just a little bit of an ambiance. I know folks are listening in right now. This building that I'm in is quite epic, actually. So when you drive down downtown San Antonio, and I know you're a San Antonio evangelist, and so and a guy who's been here for quite some time, but I always forget how historic this town looks when you roll in here and how much like brick and masonry and everything else. So it's what's also kind of neat. We're here at the HQ Geekdom. Which is a very like a co-working space. And if you think about just even looking at the different companies that are in this organization or in this building, it's neat to see this old-timey building transformed inside into this like tech hub, which is pretty incredible. So what was the impetus of that? I mean, before we kind of get into the pod, I got so many things to talk to you about, but how did this come to life?
Well, you know, I think that every city needs a place where startups are born, where the center of the startup or the entrepreneurial ecosystem for the city. And that's what I wanted Geekdom to be. My partner, Nick Longo, and I dreamed of there being a place where entrepreneurs could go and foster their ideas, feed their ideas, have it nurtured by mentors and by funders and by other people. I mean, when you have a new idea, it's hard to tell your friends and your especially your family that you're going to go start a new idea, try to start a business, you know, because you're afraid of the next year at Thanksgiving, you know, you're going to have to tell them, you know, you're going to back to work like you should have all along. Yeah. So
I told you so, right?
Yeah,
and all those other
right.
things. Yeah,
that's right. And I think that, you know, I wanted Geekdom to be a place where you could chase your dream and where you could find your team.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so, you know, finding a team has to do with your mentors, the people who might work for you, might work with you, or might just support you at the coffee pot when you're wanting your idea to live another day. And I think also one of the really important things about starting a new venture is getting started. And it's very hard to know how to get started. If you're there in your kitchen of your house, you wonder, I'm going to go quit my job and start cold turkey. It's a very hard thing to do. And so I think that Geekdom is intended to be a nurturing, supportive environment, an ecosystem of lawyers, of bankers, of investors, but even more, way more important than that are the people who also want to chase their dream, starting a business of some sort, so that you have peers who don't think you're so crazy and can help you get into motion.
No, that's good. It kind of keeps the momentum going by just being around the folks that, you know, seem to be pointing at least directionally in the right ways. You know, we're the weirdos who want to go west while everybody else is heading north because there's something over there. Really neat. So, this is a great spot. And if y'all are ever in San Antonio, I highly recommend checking out. It's just even the vibe. It's got like these almost Grand Central train station kind of vibes as you're walking through. Yet you also see these podcast rooms and things named Captain America. I mean, it's just got this really interesting vibe of, you know, what's progressive and also what's time of old. So I think y'all have done a great job doing that. So before we get in there, I mean, just for those of you who don't know who Graham is, I'm going to just kind of go through a quick little bio sheet on you there, Graham, and then we'll kind of jump into it because I know we got a couple things we want to talk through today. For those who don't know, Graham's obviously the probably most recognized here for being founder, CEO, and former chairman there of Rackspace. And if you don't know Rackspace, check them out on the New York Stock Exchange. You know, it's RAX, I think, is their ticker. You know, and so you can see Graham, he took over that in 98 as he kind of ran into some great founders about, you know, some ideas that they were trying to put together, which we all took for granted now, which is hosting and you know, being able to put things onto servers and whatnot. Things, again, we take for granted, but not something back then that was commonly used. Grew that company from 12 to 1,200 folks, and I think y'all call them Rackers, right?
Yeah,
Rackers. And so grew it from there, $200 million, and I think in 2016, y'all sold that company for a little over $4 billion, right, which was just impressive.
I was the CEO till 1,200. The company has more than 6,000 today. So it's Lanham Napier, Lou Mormon, my partners during that whole era grew it together. And then the three founders of the three founders had played different roles in the company throughout. Incredibly great team, every single one of them.
Yeah, well, I can tell that that DNA of the team and being able to continue to have things legacy and things moving forward is even just walking around this building is something that, you know, ticks in your DNA. And so if you would think that's good enough, Graham, you know, obviously is continuing with Weston Ventures and things like Geekdom and the 80/20 Foundation, is continuing to be somebody who is not only continuing to build companies, but also give back. And then was a inductee as a legend in the Texas Business Hall of Fame, which is an incredible honor. And for those who are not familiar, that is a, it really is a Hall of Fame. It is the who's who. What's amazing to me, I'll take a quick aside, is that when you meet the people who get inducted, they are the most humble folks and probably want zero of that recognition, but it's really neat to kind of be a part of that. As a matter of fact, I think coming up here, we got a gala and an inductee dinner there in Houston. But that's Graham in a nutshell.
That's right.
Yeah, that's today. So it's and I think you were 2019 was when you were inducted. I think
that's
Graham,
right.
Is that right?
That's right.
So that's a quick wrap. Anything critical that I missed on that there, Graham?
No, that sounds fine. I mean, I grew up on a cattle ranch outside of San Antonio, and you know, I got my degree in agricultural economics from A&M, and really was intending to go back and run the ranch after college, and so, but I always knew that I would be wanted to be or probably had to be an entrepreneur. I just didn't think I would fit into a regular job, and so. You know, I ended up never going back to run the ranch. I started a business while I was in a junior in college, and so by the time I got out of school, you know, I had the business already rolling. And so, my father still has not forgiven me for for not coming back to run the ranch.
Yeah, he probably had too many cows and stuff like that he had to worry about. Y'all still have that ranch there in the family?
Yes, he's 98, but he's 99 next week actually.
Holy smokes!
Yeah, so
is he still getting around
the
ranch? Everything else?
Yep, he's slowed down.
Well, but that's that. It's that cowboy strength, man, that just for these ranchers, they just live on forever. They're permanent. They're like Clint Eastwood. They're like permanently 70, but they're like 70 forever though, right? They got that hard as leather face and everything else. So Graham, I know a lot of, you have a lot of philosophies and things that we've talked about in the past about just how you think about business, how you think about building teams and how you think about just pursuing ideas. And one of the conversations we had before, what really stuck with me is you said something like, not enough people think small. A lot of folks are thinking big, big ideas, but not enough folks are thinking small. Can you talk to me just a little bit about more about what you mean by that and kind of maybe how that's influenced the way you've gone through business?
Well, I think that there's a lot of romance around the idea of the big thinker. Think about Elon Musk, and you think about how he's become, you know, the richest man in America. As you know, by thinking like I'm going to transform the electric car, create the electric car. How's he going to do that? Well, I mean that is his big vision of going to space, big vision of changing the way we drive cars. Really, at the center of them, at the center of the electric car is, can you build a car with batteries that with enough range to drive to be useful? And that's really thinking small, which is, can he create a car powered by batteries that can drive a decent amount of distance that people could use that as your primary car? And I think that is really the thinking small part of his vision. The big part is the power grid and how do we put in charging stations all over down the highways, and how do we ultimately scale that to being a large scale commercial solution to transportation. But at the center of it is really a small idea. Can I drive a car that has batteries long enough to be useful? And I think that if that was not possible, or let me say until that was possible, the big vision didn't matter. And so I think that most of the time people have strategy and tactics reversed. We need to think about tactics first, which is, can we find something that will work in the marketplace? And then ultimately, that's when you bring in the MBAs to say, how do we scale this up? Where do we locate, right? How many offices do we have? How do we hire? How much money do we raise? To me, those are all the elements of strategy which is how do we ultimately scale this idea into something big? But if you don't have a small idea at the center, you have nothing to build on. And I, Joseph, you and I were talking about, we were at a reception earlier, and when I found out that you were a West Point man, really one of the things that's really on my mind right now is the Ukraine.
Absolutely.
And how, you know, this wonderful Eastern European country that has been attacked by one of the biggest armies in the world, and how in the world could they even hold their own like they have? And I'm so proud of what they've done. And I think that one of the reasons is that there are some things that have been very important force multipliers in the war. And I'll just use an easy one that America contributed, which is the HIMARS rocket system, HIMARS artillery system. And this is basically a high-precision, long-range artillery. And this, there are only 12 of them over there, but they have been so effective by being able to pinpoint specific targets and ammo dumps and headquarters that it's really disrupted the much larger, much larger Russian army. And so the reason I say that is because that is something that's very small. It's not a strategy, it's a tactic, which is a particular weapon system staffed by three soldiers.
That's right.
That can absolutely multiply the effectiveness of thousands of people on the ground. And I really think that to me is the overlooked part of business, which is looking for those tactical advantages. In the tech industry, we often call it a product market fit, which is what does your product do that the market wants to buy? And, you know, is it, and then you figure out how do we sell this thing? Do we sell it through stores? Do we sell it online? You know, do we advertise it? Do we bootstrap it? All those things are the elements that are only relevant once you have that tactic that works in the marketplace.
I had somebody listen to somebody, Graham, say something along the lines of what you just said about tactics and saying that folks get it wrong. It's the tactics that really inform the strategy, not the other way around, you know, because we can kind of get... It's fancy to talk about, for sure. You know, let's talk about strategy. Let's talk about big ideas. There's frameworks for all those things. Is that what at all, like in the early days when you met the folks there, they were, you know, the beginnings of Rackspace, the founders that with you, is that what you saw? You saw some tactic there that was like, hey, that's actually something that we can kind of make sing and move? And is that what got you interested in the early days with that business?
Absolutely. So my business partner, Morris Miller, and I ran into these three university students who had this idea that they wanted to rent servers to people who wanted to run big websites.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, having come from the real estate business, it sounded like an apartment building, which is, you know, an apartment building is basically a place you can rent, you know, for a short period of time, call home and move out of it, move on, right? So it's like, it's a service. It's like house as a service. And, And I think that there's always a need for, whether it's a hotel or an apartment, there's always a need in a market for housing that is non-permanent, doesn't require long-term commitment. What if you had to get a mortgage to travel to New York? I mean, it's right. We need hotels for one-night stays, and we need apartments for six-month stays. So I think that in the same way of the internet, this looked like just like that for the internet, which is renting people servers. We would deploy them in 24 hours, meaning you would tell us exactly what server specs you wanted, and we would deploy them, as in have them online, connected to the internet, ready to use in 24 hours. And that was, you know, it sounds very small, but that little idea was a big idea, especially because we didn't require long-term contracts and didn't require credit checks. That is, we didn't require you to have credit or really have any money because a lot of the customers that came to us didn't have any credit. They had no business track record.
Yeah.
And so we really made it, and what did it matter? If the customer didn't pay us, we would just rent that server to somebody else next month.
No.
So, and I think that those little things are, you know, sound really small to say, but they were very important tactics in the way we, they were aspects of our service that really made it explode in popularity. And especially that we, I think we then, we adapted over time ultimately adding great customer service that we call fanatical support to the equation. But I think the company was built on this idea of renting a server by the month, deployed in 24 hours with no long-term commitment. And I think those elements were really things that made the initial offering, the tactic, very successful. And of course it evolved over time. Also, we took a credit card. So that is, we took a credit card and you paid us up front. So if you didn't pay it by the next month, we took it offline. So I think those sound very simple and very even crude, but those were exactly what the product market fit was at the time in basically January of 1999.
And I know that was a revolution for a lot of pioneering going on in that space. But what I heard you also say there is really, do you find that enough? Let me ask it this way. Do you find that a lot of entrepreneurs trying to get in are looking for the most brand new idea that they can come up with versus what is already out there already that you can just improve upon? I mean, you mentioned going faster with delivery time, being able to accept payment conditions that were non-existent at the time. Mm-hmm. Do you find that a lot of us don't look at just simply something that does exist that we can just make better and then make it our own?
Yeah, I think most of us are not going to be dreaming up the idea of Twitter or Snapchat.
Yeah.
I mean, think about Twitter, the idea of having a limited number of characters to be able to, say something. Like, that is a crazy idea. If you think that you're going to build that into a business that Elon Musk bought for $40 billion. So, most of us are not going to, I think, invent ideas like that. We're going to come up with something relatively simple. And I think Amazon's a good example. Amazon started out as books, but the idea is unlimited selection delivered very rapidly to your door. And I think that unlimited selection on books really matters because you go to the bookstore, you hunt around, and they don't have the book you want.
Yeah.
So the idea of having basically every book was a powerful idea. And if you can have every book, you could basically have everything of everything. I mean, every crib and every bucket of paint and every gadget. So that's really what Amazon is putting an unlimited selection online, accessible from the internet, paid for with a credit card, delivered to your door. And that whole system is basically optimized for reducing friction, that is reducing the customer interaction of things going wrong that cost a lot of money to go fix. And so the more they could, and then having warehousing systems and inventory systems that are, this whole workflow is held together by software.
Yeah.
And so you have the internet, you have the software that does it, and then you basically have the same old thing, which is big distribution centers that help you help ship items, which is not revolutionary.
Not at all.
So I think that is really a pretty simple idea that I think most of us could have said, most of us could have come up with the idea of creating a store online. So why didn't we do that? It's just, most of us just may have had the idea but never got into motion.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I don't think that Amazon is a revolutionary idea because retail everywhere is a very big business. But also the internet allows us to sell to large markets, global markets. So that is what allowed, Amazon to sell not just in Washington State, but all over the country, then ultimately all over the globe. So I think most of us are really should be looking for ideas that are simple in our daily lives that we can identify, that we can relate to.
Yeah, absolutely. That reminds me of a saying that we used to have in the service that just says, especially as you're looking at complicated and complex operations, it's like, go with the simple plan and execute it violently. And if you can do that, most of the time you're going to win.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I find even in business that as things get more and more complicated, it's of our own doing. And instead we should just really back up and say, what is just something here that's just, it's very simple that we can just execute with ultimate aggression and be able to kind of get it to where it needs to get. To your point, Amazon doing really nothing revolutionary in its individual pieces, but as they all kind of come together, it makes a ton of sense. And so in how they're doing it.
I think also that as we come to business with all the strengths and weaknesses of regular humans,
yeah.
And I think one of the hardest things for any business to do is to sacrifice or to narrow its focus. I mean, and I like to phrase it, my mentor Jack Trout called, use the word to sacrifice, as in don't, when Amazon started, they didn't start as the everything store. They started out as books, and books was already a big enough category. So they have broadened their approach over time, but they started out with a very narrow area that was just books. And I'm sure many people said to Jeff Bezos, well, what about hardware? You know, what about plumbing? What about electronics? You know, but he started out very narrowly focused. He sacrificed, as in he gave up things. And it's very hard for us to do that just as humans. It's very hard to reduce features or reduce but yet it's that focus that is going to, as you say, execute it violently. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't execute a very big plan easily. Most of us, especially, I mean, we're all, any entrepreneur is constrained by capital, constrained by their time. They don't have the people they really need. So you have to narrow your focus. You have to sacrifice and narrow your focus to be successful.
Did you find in the early days at Rackspace, did you have to do any of that kind of housekeeping, so to speak? Or did y'all find that at the beginning you stayed pretty well down the path for a while?
Well, it's funny. Just last week, I was at lunch with Pat Condon, one of the Rackspace founders, and he said to me that one of the best things that my partner and I imposed on them was to get rid of all their other business lines. So they were selling dial-up internet connections. They were doing IT for businesses. They had high-speed internet lines for businesses. They would do networking. That is, they would build websites. We basically narrowed the focus to only renting servers. So renting servers on the internet. Again, today we would call that dedicated hosting.
Yeah, right.
But at the time there was really not a word for it. And the word hosting kind of meant something else at the time. So I think that sacrifice, it wasn't sacrificing a lot, since they were A, not making any money at it, but also they were, I think it was an easy time to sacrifice, but I think we really did gain a lot of power through that sacrifice. Because all of a sudden, one of the other things that happens when you sacrifice is that you realize that you need to put all of your force on that decision. Your army training would say, execute violently, and I think that's a great way to put it. Because I think nearly every major success in business has involved burning the ships, as in, saying this is what we're going to do, and there's no way back, there's no way out, mm-hmm. and burning the ships, meaning that we don't have an escape route, we don't have a plan B, and plan B is basically to fail and go get jobs. That's what your plan B needs to be.
Yeah.
And so an awful lot of business ideas don't ultimately get off the ground truly because they don't have founders that are willing to burn the ships, and instead they continue to dabble. So I think burning the ships really is a metaphor for getting out of the mode of dabbling, getting into motion toward a focused objective, a narrow objective that your current resources can actually execute on. I think that's a critical element.
No, I would agree. How do you think about, two things came through my mind as you were saying that, Graham. One being, you get a lot of businesses that say, and I imagine Rackspace was probably an iconic one, or was probably, a case study for it, where those things that you cut could be argued that, hey, they all kind of adapt to this ecosystem. An MBA would call it an ecosystem, right? So this thing kind of can upsell into this thing, so on and so forth. How do you know? It seems easy if you're doing a line of business that just made, like if you at Rackspace were also for some reason running a coffee shop, you should probably stop doing that. That makes a ton of sense. In the scenarios where the things kind of seem like they could help each other, how do you know at that point it's still a good idea to sacrifice?
Well, I think that it's a great question, and this is this is sort of one of the hard things about being humans and being the decisions we have to make in business. When I say being humans, as humans, we are tempted buy things. I mean, I've had a weight problem my whole life. I'm tempted to eat too much. Okay. And so
you look great, Grant.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. But I mean, I think that, look, I'm saying we all are tempted by things,
yeah.
That we, and sometimes we know they're bad for us, sometimes not. But I think that the temptation, you know, there's a quote attributed to me that I don't know whether I said it or not, but the idea is that the devil is who gets you to diversify. Okay. As in the devil, this force saying, look, let's offer more. Most of the time when you diversify is in add additional breadth to what you're doing. It better be once you have a really solid foundation of being narrow, of being specialized. So I think that it's just before, I think that, so my point is that there are, most of the time, small enterprises need to specialize.
Yeah.
They need to narrow what they're doing because they have to have enough force to punch through into the market that doesn't want them there. There's so much choice in today's market, so much noise. Customers can buy your product, they can buy your competitor's product or do nothing. So it's very hard to get your buyer's attention in the marketplace. And so you have to have an offering that is clear enough, narrow enough, that that your customer is willing to overlook all that noise for. And it's just very hard. Most, again, if you look at a restaurant like Five Guys that has, or In-N-Out Burger that have basically two or three items, and then compare it to your local coffee shop that will have four and five pages of items. And I think that this is an example that only a few items, again, a Five Guys Burgers or In-N-Out Burger that has only a few items, continues to work for them even as a very big business. And I think that, but if it's a small business, the tactics that work as a small business have to be all about focusing your energy, focusing your attention, and having, and also having the boss, the leadership, focused and so very involved and aware at the front lines of where you're trying those tactics on the marketplace. And I think that as businesses get bigger and as the leadership is more focused on the strategy of the company,
yeah.
It's very easy to lose track of what is really what's working in the marketplace. And I think that happens everywhere. If you look at, look at nearly every industry, look at before Apple got into the phone business, Nokia, BlackBerry were the biggest, very successful phone companies, and today they're gone.
Yeah.
So the leadership of those companies were so focused on things other than the phone experience that they're ultimately, you know, bankrupt or completely gone.
When you were at Rackspace, just talking about the leadership component of you grew a company, you get 12 to 1,200, now, you know, north of 6,000. What were the things that you always did, especially maybe in the first 50 to 100 employees, it's easy to kind of get your arm around it. But to also not only culture of the company, but also understanding what's going on the front lines, were there some things that you just kept yourself accountable to doing to make sure you kind of never lost that pulse, so to speak?
There were a lot of things we did wrong. a lot of things we did, you know, let me just clarify that I was CEO until 1200 and then transitioned to my partners, Lou Moorman and Lanham Napier, who basically took over the core, key leadership. I remained with the business during that time. So it ultimately grew to 6,000 before the company was sold. But I think during that time, I was definitely not the leader to take it to the full distance. I probably should have left or should have backed off earlier than I did. But I think that when a company grows from scratch, when the leadership has seen the company grow from scratch, it's very that anxiety of finding product market fit, which is how do we get the market to want our product? How do we need to change it? That is so acutely burned into the founder, the key leadership's mind,
yeah.
That I think it permanently helps them understand what it is that they do. And I would say that that's true for Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk, or that is the battle scars that they incurred in creating their businesses are, are burned into their minds in a different way than subsequent leadership will ever really completely understand. You also need the leadership skills you need the MBAs, you need the leadership skills of the subsequent, you know, era of a company as well, because company faces different things. Once you find product market fit, once your tactic is accepted in the marketplace, then you need you need a lot more skills to add to that. But I think that the thing that I'm proudest of, a thing I'm proud of, is that I think that the senior leadership of Rackspace remained very, very close to the customer throughout our time. And I think that one of the things that happened was Rackspace went from being primarily a service company to primarily being a technology company. And that is a very hard very hard shift for companies to make. It's very hard to change a company's DNA. And I think that in some ways we were not the right people to successfully lead that shift. And so I think that any company that has to change its business model will struggle to do that. I do think that we remained very close to the customer and very responsive to the customer. And I think that was our hallmark, fanatical support, which is sort of the fancy word we put on it.
Yeah.
Really at the heart of it was our desire to serve customers in such a way that they could completely rely on us. And I think that we accomplished that. The market also moves on.
Yeah.
And things change, and what customers want change. And so what tactic that worked for us in 1999 doesn't work necessarily forever. So and has to be changed. And that's one of the things is that even though the BlackBerry was an incredible invention in its moment, the iPhone was better.
Yeah.
And so this is the danger of business, but it's also the magic of Western capitalism, is that the fact that you have to remain competitive at all times, and very few companies can do that.
Yeah, and you just can't set it and forget it. I mean, it's what makes the sport of this thing fun, just keeping you on the edge. You also mentioned a thing, as we've talked in the past, in addition to having product market fit, great team, being able to look and focus on things. I've heard you talk in the past about timing is critical too. And it's, you know, some people maybe call it luck, other folks call it environment or whatever you want to call it. How have you thought about timing, a really interesting thing that may or may not be within your control?
Yeah, timing is a huge element because you can. I think about markets like a wave. Like if you think you're out there paddling in the ocean trying to catch a wave, you think about you're paddling along trying to catch a wave. If you're paddling before the wave comes, you don't get very far.
That's right.
And if you paddle after the wave goes, you don't get very far. So, if you can be on that wave, it just makes all the difference. Again, I like to think about it as being at the right place, the right time. You can't always dictate that. It's very easy to be too early. The electric car. I mean, I drive a Tesla. That's a 2015 Tesla. It's 7 years old, and you know, I remember when I got that car, I didn't go out and buy Tesla stock. I mean, I really did not. I mean, I thought it was really cool to have, and I love it.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that the electric car idea has been around a long time, and there have been many companies succeed and fail. So I think that we, and in the case of Tesla, one of the things that they've done is they've created the success of the category themselves. They launched they basically are building the market themselves without the help of General Motors or Toyota, or the Elon Musk even licensed the IP, the trademarks, the patents, to the whole car industry for free, because he really felt that it was going to help evolution of the whole electric car. Well, I mean, so I think that the idea that we don't get to pick our timing always. But if you're being at the right place, the right time, when a market is ready for you, makes all the difference. And sometimes you can be too early, sometimes you can be too late. Like today, if you want to start a search engine, you're just not going to make any progress. Look, I mean, look how much money Microsoft has spent on Bing, and how many times have any of us used Bing in the last year?
Yeah, you forget about the name almost. Yeah, there's obviously the iconic ones. What would you say, Graham, about if you acknowledge after you kind of get your business or, you know, the seedling kind of grown a little bit that you paddled either too soon or too late? Do you stick with it, or is there a certain point or things that you've seen in the past inform you that maybe you need to either wait or bounce into something else?
And see, that is actually why I mentioned being the disadvantage of being human in these issues, which is you have to both be we talk about tenacity.
Yep.
But we also, we often don't talk enough about judgment, which is when to be tenacious and when to give up.
Yeah.
And that's really important, because pushing a bad position, burning your resources, your time, your attention, either at the wrong timing with the wrong product. I mean, this is something that tenacity is not the only virtue here. Having the judgment to know when to pull the plug and being willing to pull the plug is just as important, probably more so. So, I mean, I really think that there are many ideas that are too early, too late, or you don't have the chops to get it done, where you do need to just pull the plug and say, you hope that you have investors that understand the risk that they took. And so there's not a lot of, ugliness of pulling the plug.
Yeah.
But I think that figuring out when to be tenacious and persistent and when to pull the plug, to me is one of those questions that has no answer. It's situational. And also it's, I think that it's very easy to overestimate your skills and to say, no matter what, we'll be able to prevail. And I know from firsthand that I have been wrong in that particular dimension in big ways many times. And so, which means that my tenacity, my optimism ultimately led me to decisions that were wrong.
Yeah, interesting. I know, and that probably goes back to that level of self-awareness one needs to have to be able to make that either not only about oneself, but also about the company and the team and the product and everything else that kind of comes along with it. When you think about timing, and especially as it, you think about folks wanting to get into this sport that we call business and entrepreneurship, kind of the macro timing. So when you think about folks who want to get into it, do you find that there's a commonality and you've obviously seen founders and entrepreneurs and teammates. Do you find there's also a timing in people's career? So outside of business, kind of the question I'm thinking about is more like skill set that makes entrepreneurs at a really good timing in their life to get into the game? Or is there really any math or chemistry that you've seen that work one way or another?
Well,
because you got into this later is kind of my point, is that you had businesses before and you saw this opportunity. So I find it fascinating because you could have, you could have probably easily said no,
Yeah, I think that I was 34 when Rackspace started, but which was a lot younger than the founder, the college kids who just started the company who were 23, 24. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, I think that in that case, it was a good combination between the young people who had their finger on the pulse of the internet way more than I did, and also could see opportunities that I don't think I would have ever seen. So, I think that when you are young, you have a lot less to lose, and so I think then also you have less overhead. I think that most of us should really be very careful about incurring any fixed costs. One of my mentors just said, anytime you are creating a fixed cost, avoid it. And fixed costs are, having kids are fixed costs, right?
Yes, they
are. Buying a house is a fixed cost.
Yeah.
Buying a car and a note is a fixed cost. That is, of course, you get out of school and you buy a car, all of a sudden there's your first fixed cost. You get your cell phone, there's a fixed cost. Now, in theory, you could stop them, but that those are in the short term of, a fixed cost. Then you start to add, maybe you add kids, right? You basically have a huge fixed cost for them.
Mm-hmm.
You may send them to a private kindergarten, right? Instead of a public a free public school.
Yeah.
And each of these things adds layers of fixed cost to your life. And I think the more fixed cost you have, the harder it is to ever take a risk, because, being willing to get in motion. To me, the question is, at what age is it easiest to get into motion and to say to your parents and friends, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to go do this. I mean, it's the older you get, the harder it is to do that. And so I think that, on the other hand, I think that, for most of us, starting something in our 20s is probably earlier than ideal, because you haven't really, you lack sort of depth of experience. But I think there are an awful lot of people who from 27 to 42, say that 15
That's
years.
That's the number that went through my brain. Yeah.
I think, just for easy math. So I think that, but really what matters is for each person, when is that right? When is the time to burn the ships and to go all in on something? And I think that, again, having a family makes it harder to go all in.
Yeah.
Right. So, that is anything that disrupts your ability to focus. Again, having kids is a great thing. And I love my kids, and I'm very glad I have them. I'm glad that I waited until I was a little older before having them. Cause I think that that my level of, my early dates, I would fall asleep on the date because I was working long hours in my business. And I think that those long hours translated to, something, success.
Yeah.
I don't know whether, I'm also not necessarily a believer that it's only hard work that does it. It's just that I think when you have burning, it's the level of commitment that really is more important than the hours of labor.
Yeah, no, that's incredible, Graham. I think that, I think about timing for folks who want to get into it. Two things come into my mind as I talk to folks. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, kind of as an extension of what you've already said. I think 20s is a cool time. I meet a lot of young folks, young aspiring entrepreneurs and things of that nature, and you can tell they're in a rush. Like they feel like they're behind. And I'm like, man, 20s is a great time to just do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Take the risk, as you mentioned, because you're kind of aerodynamic is what I call them.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of cut through it. 30s is really great because you do have some wisdom, and now you can kind of, you're still young, you're still bold, you still got the energy, family situations and things of that nature. After you've kind of considered timing, how do you also consider, just for lack of better words, DNA? When folks also should decide that, being employee one maybe isn't what they're supposed to be doing, and being employee 40 is maybe a better fit.
Absolutely. I like to think about the first 15 people within a new enterprise being really the ones who shape it the most.
Yeah.
I think about people like my former partner, Morris Miller. I think about Richard Yu, Dirk Elmendorf, Pat Condon. That is the three college kids who the founders of Rackspace. And then Paul Frutan and John Ingates, and David Bryce. These are the names of the people who are among the first 15. And I think that this was the group of people who really, they weren't all the founders, but they were all people that were critical to shaping what was to become a 6,000 employee company.
Yeah.
And so, each of them played a very important role. So it's really not just the founders that are critical. And a lot of us, that is, someone who's listening today, I think may not be the founders. In fact, what I like about not being the founder is that you get to pick from different ideas. I mean, you could go, there are 10 different startups out there that you could go work for, and you can pick the one that resonates with you the most, or the one that you think is going to succeed the most. That is, whereas when you are the founder, like you could find yourself with a business idea that has either is too early, too late, underfunded, or that just is off target.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I have a number of very important friends who have spent a decade on trying to find that hole in the market, and some succeeded, some have failed. And so I think that if you're not the founder, founders, you have actually way more control over timing, over the business idea. I mean, anyone should, you'd like to find an idea that is scalable, meaning can be made big, can access big markets. I mean, that is, a restaurant is not a scalable idea, whereas, you know, selling a product, you know, online is, because it can be done from a central location. Could be, you can ship all over the country, so that some ideas are more scalable, more powerful than others. Some business models are more powerful than others. So I think that, don't insist on just being the founder. That is, there, I think especially for folks with military experience, I think that that many of them are the training experience that they've had are often very, very well suited toward being the number two way that, you know, the post founder era. Like, and that part of that first 15, I think about Paul Frutan, a man who was critical to Rackspace's success. He was probably employee number six after the first five of us. You know, critical person, and really shaped what the company was to become. David Bryce, same thing. He was the father of Fanatical Support, shaped what the company was to become. And I think that they joined an enterprise that already had some ideas solidified, and their job was to go and bring them to life. And so I think that there's a lot of romance around being a founder, and, you know, but I think that a lot of people don't fit into being the founder. And also, founders need people who can, help them get the job done. So we also, when you talked about DNA, one of the most important things about DNA is to know that having, we talk about sort of diversity of, there's a lot of talk about diversity in today's world.
Yeah,
I think the most important diversity to have that gets overlooked is diversity of thought, as in diversity of skills. That is, we need people who can think ahead, and we need people who can act now, or we need both of those things. And so, you know, I think having this is why I think most of the larger, more successful venture capital investors really want to see businesses created by multiple founders, because that founding team is better than a founding person, because they're able to have more diversity of thought, diversity of skills, skills that complement each other. And so I think that most of the time you're looking for, you know, at Geekdom, we want you to chase your dream and find your team. Chasing your dream is to help your dream come to life. But also find your team, find the people who are going to do that with you and help you succeed. If you're going to burn the ships, don't be alone when
you do it. Yeah. When you talk about chasing your dreams, I appreciate the perspective just on being the employee that comes later on down the road. I think if people looked about value and adding value to something and where their potential and their skills can best help the world just elevate in general, you'd probably start looking at things a little bit differently. But when you talk about just chasing your dreams, what do you feel like ends up holding, you know, folks back? I was actually on a drive the other day and was talking to my wife. We were driving and she could tell when I start pondering something, get quiet. I know, she goes, you don't usually quiet for very long. And she goes, what are you thinking about? And I said, you know what's weird? I think about the amount of people that probably have a brilliant idea who actually didn't do anything with it. And the world is definitely a worse place because of it. Because we never got to see it. Thank God I don't know what that is, because otherwise I'd probably be really let down. But I think about a lot of folks who just don't get into motion, I think of using your words, you know, don't get into motion. How should one think about that? You know, whether they're employee one, or maybe they need to go find a team first before they do it, or wait on some timing. How would you kind of think about or advise somebody who does have an idea that they feel really strongly about in the ways to think about pursuing that?
Well, I think that, you know, find mentors. One of my colleagues, Lorenzo Gomez, says, you know, to create a board of directors. To me, that's a matter of finding and identifying people that you respect and trust and who will shoot straight with you, so that you have, the right advisors. Having good advisors, people who are supportive, maybe a parent, maybe a friend. And the next one is find co-founders, find people who are collaborators, people who to me, about this idea that most of those ideas that never got launched are because people were fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to get into motion. I like the word get into motion because it doesn't talk about anything big. The question just is, how can you get started? And I think finding a co-founder or a collaborator is one of the ways to feel less fearful, because you're not doing it alone and because you have some diversity of skills. So getting into motion really first and foremost is about overcoming the fear of committing to it, and especially to committing to it all the way, burning the ships.
Yeah.
That is a very fearful thing, and you don't want to go to Thanksgiving and go, oh yeah, by the way, my things failed and
I got a real job now,
right? So and we fear that. We truly, there are lots of things that don't happen in our lives because of that fear. And so I think that having a support network, you know, also called mentors, also called board of directors, that just means that you have people that you can rely on and who will, you know, be straight with you, hopefully have some wisdom that you don't have in that moment. You know, and then finding a co-founder, finding other collaborators who will make you, will help you succeed and help you ultimately get into motion and burn the ships.
Yeah.
Burning the ships is in fully committing to something until you either starve to death or you pull the plug and go back to doing something else. And I just think that without that level of commitment, that commitment doesn't do it alone.
Yeah.
But to succeed, it's unlikely to happen without that commitment.
Yeah, I know it's rare, and if it does, it probably doesn't reach the heights that, you know, something like that could. With the bit of time that we do have left, one of the things that you, obviously being a Texas guy, I being a Texas guy, just this is home. The one thing that I've always observed, just especially, you know, when you talk about teams and building great companies and focus and living on and pushing your dream into existence, I've always found this place that we call Texas to be really encouraging of that. I meet guys like you and gals like, you know, that have created really incredible things. And I always found that when I just thought they wouldn't have enough time to give me the time of day, especially when they saw someone working hard or just really trying to figure it out, always been willing to help. And what's even weirder, I've seen competitors in the Texas space help each other out, because it's almost as if they want to see the best, like they really truly want to compete against the best. So if they can help their buddy out to get them to that level so that they're truly competing with the best. How have you found that Texas in itself has been really fruitful for your experience? I mean, and maybe you could have done this as successful in New York or in California or whatever, but the state itself, just the energy of the people and the personality, you know, I know we got the Texas Business Hall of Fame this evening and things of that nature. And this is where I know Texans love to celebrate, you know, these captains of industry. Just how have you found that to be a super helpful network in general?
Well, I think Texas is a can-do state. And there are certainly other states that have very strong strengths. But I think that Texas ultimately is the can-do state. It's a place where the American dream, where the heartbeat for the American dream, I believe. And I think that, there are people moving from around the country because they want to be, in that can-do place.
Mm.
And I think that there are certainly strengths to other states, no question about it. But I think the core, the people who came to Texas back in the 17 and 1800s were people looking to establish a new life for themselves, to reboot their lives, to basically say, this is where I'm going to settle down. And I think that those virtues remain true today. And I think that, with a sense of independence,
yeah,
you have less of a sense of interdependence. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying that there are other more rural states, more urban states that I think have a much greater sense of interdependence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these ideas are at odds, at extremes, but also ultimately, you know, we need a society that can both work together, but also where individual initiative is honored, is expected, is rewarded, and ultimately we're here to help ourselves to make sure that our lives are guided by our own initiative, even though we have so many people to be thankful for, you know, the amazing system of government, the military that keeps that freedom in place. We are both interdependent, as in thankful and deserve to give credit to so many others. But also we are called on as Texans and as Americans to use our own initiative and chart our own course and not wait around for leadership from others to ultimately chart our own course. And I think in Texas, it's very much seen as a virtue.
Yeah.
I think that Texas also is a very pro-business state. You know, we're seeing right now that the cost of living, inflation, cost of rent, gas, these things are big issues in the upcoming election because people are no longer able to afford the lifestyle that they want for their family, and so these things are the most basic. Having a good job, being able to afford to live where you want to live, being able to send your kids, give your kids the life that they want. These are things that we really want, very basic. These are very basic things that we want. And we see that right now when things are tough, that these are, I think that there are an awful lot of politics, an awful lot of just, it gets governed, it gets led astray by other issues sort of there that are less, but we have to remember that in my opinion, being a pro-business state means that we are aiming toward prosperity here in terms of our job, our cost of living, that having great jobs is one of the most basic thing that we all want. Being able to feed our family, provide the family that we want them to have in safety. Imagine if you lived in Ukraine, there's no safety in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And so, I think that those are all things that make Texas great. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, I think that the pro-business, Texas is a pro-business place. And I think that, and I think also that's why so many companies are moving here because they're wanting to be in a place where their success is good and honored and where they feel that they can operate with the least friction. So I think that those are and so as long as Texas to me that being pro-business is one way to put it. And again, I think that doesn't mean necessarily that it's Democrat or Republican. I think to me it just means that we understand where our bread is buttered and what we all want is to that economic stability and success is the most basic thing before even the other things that we all want, in a civil society.
Yeah.
And
the tactics you talked about,
the
right?
Tactics, yeah.
Where you get to, which I think is incredible. Yeah, that's I've always found it, and it's great hearing your level of insight on that. And you said something like, this is kind of the bass drum of the heartbeat of America. I do feel, and I know anybody's listening right now is like, of course you'd say that, Jeff, because you're from the state. But I always tell folks, just come here and just check it out. People, what's neat about this state is kind of what's neat about America is that you can just choose to be Texan. Yep. You show up here. I had my father-in-law visit, early on, and he went and bought himself a hat and a pair of cowboy boots and checked in his membership card, to be a Texan. And I think that it's one of these things when you start thinking about why the state's also great. It's extremely welcoming of anybody who's willing to kind of, hey, be independent, fight for yourself kind of thing, but also at the same time take care of your community. And while doing that, just lifting each other up as you're doing those kinds of things. And so I agree. I think there's a lot of goodness that comes from being in this state, but also sharing it.
Yeah.
With a lot of folks who can kind of see this as a beacon of light. And to your point, we love from east to west, there are a ton of things that make this entire country really great. But I do find that there's just a lot of fun nature to, it's this balance between folks that are just easygoing and very approachable, yet there's this tenacity that they have to go do things that matter. And I can just tell, even just with your career there, Graham, and the folks that you met along the way, that's very evident. So the last thing I want to leave you with is just the giving back portion of it. I know that when a guy like you gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, a lot of that has nothing to do with the fact, yes, created great businesses and have done incredible things to grow the capitalist part of doing this sport. But obviously there's a lot of things that I've seen you continue to give back on. Is that something that you've always thought about doing? Like, is that, you know, something that you knew you at some point in your life or you've done along the way that giving back was very core to your DNA? Because it's very clear to me that that's what you've done.
Well, I think in the earlier part of my career, no, giving back was not on my agenda at all. I mean, and I think that really, you know, I had a professor in college who used to say that, you know, your first obligation to the poor is to not be one of them, as in we each have to lift ourselves up to the extent we can. I'm not even saying everybody can, but I'm saying that that is to use our own initiative is what comes first. And then secondly, we do need to give back, and we do need to support. Again, I use the poor as a metaphor for those who we can help. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, I think that certainly I had no real effort to. I had not met a politician till I was in. I'd never met a mayor till I was in. Till the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would say I was just focused on my business. I mean, I think that my part of it is that as our business grew, we could see that San Antonio supported our success in a very good way for a long time. But also we were growing so fast, we hired 100 people a week for years, 100 people a month, that is, for years.
Yeah.
And we could also see that there was a lot of talent that we needed to grow the business that we were lacking. And I really felt that, and we had to ask people to move, and who wants to move,
right? Yeah.
So but it also gave me a real sense of the potential that San Antonio had that is untapped. And so I feel that I just felt very connected to that idea, which is how can San Antonio ultimately reach the potential that it has. And really, it's not just San Antonio. It's really the San Antonio and South Texas. You have to say that all as one.
That's right.
You know, we're actually we're part of a region, part of Austin. And sort of Austin is clearly the central of Texas.
Yeah.
And really, San Antonio is the tip of the south of Texas. So I think because San Antonio is already 60% plus Hispanic, I think that we have an even more Hispanic population south of us toward us in the border, and these are 100% Americans who want the American dream of their own. And I think that San Antonio is kind of the big city to South Texas. And that means Brownsville. It means Mission.
Yeah.
It means
Harlingen, Weslaco. Yeah, all those.
Harlingen, Weslaco. McAllen,
yeah.
That is, and all the way to Corpus. I think that I think we play an important role as the big city, the place where you go to the big universities, the big hospitals. That is, I think that we play an important role to reaching the potential of the young people born today in Weslaco,
yeah,
right, or born today in McAllen, and I think that's again, San Antonio also is. Each of the cities in Texas is so different. San Antonio being a largely Hispanic city, you know, a 60% plus Hispanic city, it is influenced by our Mexican heritage.
Yeah.
And as you say, you can choose to be a Texan, and there are a lot of people in Mexico who would choose to be Texans right now, and it shows the attractiveness of bringing your family into America and bringing it to Texas, because these are people who want good jobs. These are people who are wanting to work hard to be better for their family. And I think that we need to be serving the South Texans who are born today in Weslaco. You know, I just feel like this is an enormous region population that is also linked to the Austin region, San Antonio, Austin region. And I think there's so much potential here, and I've just always felt that I want to play a role in helping unlock that potential in mm-hmm. the coming decades.
Yeah, it's incredible, Graham. And yeah, you're right. This was growing up in South Texas. San Antonio was always Dallas seemed so far away, and you know Austin was one that unless you had a reason to be there, you didn't really stop by. But San Antonio was the aspiration, and that was back then. You know, and so I can totally see it now. But Graham, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you,
it's been incredible to get your insights, and I know you're a busy guy, so appreciate the few minutes you were able to spend with us today.
You bet. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you all for listening. This is the Professionally Offensive Podcast. You can catch us on all platforms. JC out.